Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 3:25 p.m. That is Central Time. Today is Monday, and it is February 6th. So I thought we'd kick off with the Hang Seng, which was down a couple of percent in here today, and certainly unwinding the short-term overbought condition, and quite likely to come back and at least test the 20,000 level, and then we'll see what happens in terms of support being built to sustain this recovery, but certainly, geopolitical conditions are complicated. So, the USA shot down a, and I think I'm going to use a term that my daughter uses, inverted commas, research balloon, which I can't think of in any other terms other than kite flying. And it's a very handy thing to do, just to float up a balloon with cameras on it and let it, and then just predict where the jet stream is going to go, and then let it float over your geopolitical adversary's home turf and see what they're going to do about it. And certainly, the U.S. administration had a couple of days to make a decision. They let it float over the entire continent of North America, and then shot it down over the Atlantic. So obviously this is just another example of geopolitical tit for tat and probing the extent to which one side or the other is willing to defend themselves or retaliate. And this is all part of the great game that is ongoing. And there's nothing trivial about what's going on. But stock markets are continuing to proceed as if there is nothing particularly untoward. So this, I think, is particularly important, that as we look at stock markets, then what they are looking at is the most likely outcome, which is that nothing happens, but that geopolitical tensions continue to ratchet higher. And it's unlikely that we're going to see the events that everybody associates with a really very tense or difficult environment erupt without there being some sort of stock market event preceding it. Because it simply makes sense that the most well-informed people will take their chips off the table before there's any major escalation. But we can certainly anticipate that there are going to be plenty of news items where we have one side or the other probing the willingness of the other side to endure what might be considered a slight. So at least the Hang Seng is unwinding its short-term overbought condition. Now, when we then think about everything else that's going on, well, the yen continues to weaken, and it was sharply lower in here today. So, coming right back now and testing the region of the 200-day moving average. But I think when we zoom in on the daily, then it's quite clear that it has broken, the dollar has now broken the sequence of lower rally highs. So, clear confirmation of support in the region of about 127. And there's certainly the potential here that we're going to see additional upside for the dollar here, and a good part of the reason for that is because of the commonality that we're seeing in bonds. So JGB yields are back around the 50 basis point level, and the Bank of Japan is spending a really rather extraordinary quantity of cash to try and suppress the yield around this level. But we're definitely seeing that bond yields are popping up everywhere. And the UK gilt was stronger today by nearly 19 basis points. So, very clearly bouncing from the region of the 200-day moving average. And then let's look at Australian 10-year debt. And we can see that it was one of the few places where we did not have an upward dynamic, but it is in the region of the 200-day moving average, and it wouldn't be at all surprising to see some follow-through on the upside, considering the moves that we've had in most other jurisdictions in here today. The German Bund was also higher, and 10-year yields in the USA following through on the pop on the upside from Friday and extending the move up through the 3.5% level. And of course, what this is helping to do is to get everybody back reconsidering what the potential is for interest rate cuts within the short term. The Federal Reserve has said in plain English they are not going to cut rates this year. They intend to raise rates again. Now, everyone has pretty much concluded, or many investors have concluded, that the next interest rate hike by the Federal Reserve will be the last one, because how could they possibly continue to raise rates when the economy is already slowing down and disinflationary forces have been identified? Well, we're going to see. And the Nasdaq was down 1% today, so it has broken its sequence of lower rally highs, and it is trading back above the 200-day moving average. So what the bulls need to see here is that it continues to hold this breakout. Now, there has been a really significant uptick in interest in the future and in the promise of technological innovation. I'm posting ARK Innovations' Big Ideas for 2023 report today in Comment of the Day. And the thing that really stood out to me from flicking through it is the number of times the word trillion have been used. 20 trillion here, 40 trillion there. And the total addressable market of AI being somewhere upwards of 40 trillion. And what I find amazing is just how inured we've become to listening to the word trillion being bandied around and not even blinking at the sheer volume of cash required to fulfill even 1 trillion in spending. And we're talking about a total addressable market of 40 trillion by 2030. Now, in case anyone's forgotten, we're in 2023. So within 7 years, and we're talking about artificial intelligence having this kind of distortion in terms of the global economy. Now, I'm not saying it's impossible. Certainly, we've had some fantastic technological innovation in the course of the last 20 years. And there are lots of potential promising technologies out there in development on the cusp of commercialization, but I don't think anyone is under the illusion that these things don't take cash and interest rates continue to rise. So certainly the big brother type of scenario where you don't get a big project off the ground any longer without somebody there to donate cash. And Microsoft is fulfilling that role with OpenAI and giving them 10 billion. That is following or in the same month that they've laid off over 10,000 people. And then you had Meta Platforms announcing a 40 billion buyback and then at the same time laying off thousands of workers. So at least investors can have some comfort in the fact that companies are being run with the shareholder in mind. But how much money is Microsoft willing to pour into OpenAI before they see a return on it? And obviously, there's a lot of hype around this sector, and OpenAI is a private company. So then, of course, we also have to have this consideration about how prevalent is the private company model going to be in future. Because obviously, when we were thinking about markets, we do depend on companies coming to the market in search of finance. And when they don't have to come to market and they stay private for longer, well, then more of the value is captured within the private markets. And That has been certainly the case for the last decade. And I would argue that it is almost entirely dependent on interest rates staying low indefinitely so that the private markets are not competed. They don't have any competition from public markets. It's usually when we have a higher interest rate environment when private markets demand much higher yields in return for their funding that it pushes companies into the market looking for access to funds and in return for selling part of their company in the stock market. So we're certainly in a very interesting environment, and it does beg the question whether we're in the middle of a paradigm shift. And of course, the big question really is about the 10-year yield and its total return. So it is now pulling back from the region of the 200-day moving average. And this certainly looks like a major change. So we had the most consistent trend in the world, which then accelerated in 2019 and 20, rolling over, has now sustained a move below the 1,000-day moving average for the first time, and is now encountering resistance in the region of the 200-day moving average. There is the realistic possibility that we're looking at the end of the secular bull market in bonds. And that implies that the cost of financing for every type of venture is going to rise. And if the cost of funding rises, the nominal price has to come down. And that is a recipe for a secular bear market on Wall Street. And it's not great news for fixed assets, particularly those things like property, which are already very highly valued. Now that would then, and that is, of course, assuming that inflation doesn't also continue higher. Now, the problem, of course, is that inflation doesn't have to be a straight line trend. It can ebb and flow. So now that we've had a big breakout in inflationary numbers, the dearest hope of most people is that inflation comes straight back down and stays there. But the big, I think the biggest change that we've had is that now central bankers are chastened, and they're going to be reluctant to cut interest rates as aggressively in future or leave those interest rates down for a prolonged period of time. Of course, that at the moment is a hypothesis because we haven't had an event yet that would necessitate that interest rates should fall. But it would appear to be common sense, at least, that if we were flies in the wall and listening to conversations at a central bank, and they have just had a major flirtation with modern monetary theory and had their fingers burned, well, you'd think at least that they wouldn't be prepared again to go back in and try it once more. So we're certainly at an interesting juncture for markets. One thing that I think is also particularly relevant is because we do have these geopolitical tensions, there are going to have to be some really hard discussions about how to fund defense, and most particularly, how to be credible in terms of a deterrent. And if, particularly in Europe, where populations have become used to siphoning money out of defense budgets and putting it to work, particularly in social services, how are people going to get around that particular quandary? And it is a significant question. And the iShares Defense ETF is right in the region of the upper side of the 5-year range. And I suspect that the most likely progress is on the upside. Now, I don't often mention the Autonomies Fund, and I don't have it in my own portfolio because I don't want to advertise, and also I think I don't want to be facetious about it either, but it is breaking on the upside. And this also suggests that there is demand for more defensive sectors, particularly those that have reliable cash flows. And these are also very clearly have a close Venn diagram with a lot of the dividend aristocrats. And the dividend aristocrats are not breaking higher, but they are holding in the region of the 200-day moving average. So these are highly defensive. And certainly then when we think about companies like those that are leading the FTSE 100 higher in the UK, well, what I find interesting is that they're consumer oriented. Reckitt Benckiser is bouncing from the lower side of a 5-year range. And Smith and Nephew, which is, I guess, medical equipment, had a big upward dynamic on Friday and is holding at least in the region of this 1200p level. So it hasn't quite yet broken the downtrend, but it is above the 200-day moving average. So we're seeing that there's more interest in the healthcare sector and more interest in consumers. And that is, of course, also then a bet on the rising middle class internationally. Now, obviously, the questions about China, and then that is going to throw focus onto the emerging markets. And let me see if I can remember the. I'm very sorry. I always have difficulty remembering the emerging markets ex China ETF. So it's also susceptible to some profit taking, having unwound the oversold condition relative to the 1000-day moving average. And it's not immune from reticence to invest in emerging markets without China doing better. But obviously, we are still in a geopolitically tense environment. But the reality is that the further out we look, the greater the reality is that all of the growth in the global economy is likely to come from the emerging markets, that we are seeing a one-time massive surge of young people into the global economy. And at this is unlikely to be repeated in this decade, excuse me, in this century. The global birth rate is already peaking. So it hasn't quite peaked in much of Africa, but it is globally peaking. And eventually we're going to get to a point where there's going to be a dearth of younger people. So between now and then, there's going to be a lot of investment in manufacturing capacity in lots of poorer countries, and then investment in labor-saving devices like artificial intelligence in developed economies. And somewhere in between, we'll have a vibrant middle class. But that vibrant middle class is likely to be in the emerging markets because of all of the challenges in terms of spending priorities that are going to be facing a lot of the developed markets, particularly when you have to compete between guns and butter. So, even though we're still in this environment where we have some selling pressure emerging in stock markets, and it's certainly a rebound in the dollar, and gold prices having put in a downside Q reversal last week and following through so far on the downside, although certainly not in a dynamic manner in here today. I think the biggest battle going on right now is in the oil market. Saudi Arabia raised prices to Asia over the weekend, and the price today was up in early trading, then down, and then finished up on the day, so bouncing from the $80 level, and hasn't quite yet pulled back into the range, which would necessitate the Biden administration getting active to start supporting the price. But we are testing that level. What we're seeing in oil prices is a clear battle between the deflationary forces of inflation coming back down and difficulties in economies as a result of central bank tightening versus the willingness of the producers to curtail spending on new production. And of course, we have also got this massive amount of Russian oil that goes to places like Russia and India, and that is at a significant discount to global prices. And that's also helping to reduce demand for the blends that support the futures market. So we're certainly in a more difficult environment for commodities. And we're in a difficult environment for the stock market, where a lot of faith has been put in a big rebound, and now it's starting to pull back. And the big question for everyone is going to be whether the 200-day moving average now acts as support. We've seen a large number of shares on the NYSE pushing back above their 200-day moving average. It's up now to 70%. And it's quite unusual for that number to go above 80%. So it would suggest that the rebound we've had already is quite long in the tooth, and that we should anticipate that there is going to be at least a pause in consolidation, and it might yet push through to 80% or more than that. But generally speaking, when it gets up to 80%, that's about as high as it goes. And then we'll start to see a rollover. So I think it isn't a time to take big risks in the market, and it is time to be a little bit more judicious about stops and thinking about the potential for hiccups in the market. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.